everybody, and welcome to the TeachNet podcast. Today, I'm joined by two old friends, Claire McAvinia and Pauline Rooney from the Centre for Academic Practice in Trinity College, Dublin. And I'm going to ask them to tell us a little bit about the work that they're engaged in the area of digital education. And Pauline, without further ado, you might introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about the work that you do in the Centre for Academic Practice.
Hello, Michael, and thank you so much for the invitation. It's great to see you again. So I'm Pauline. I'm the head of the Centre for Academic Practice in Trinity. I've been working in higher education now for coming up to 25 years with a background in digital education. And in the Centre in Trinity, our role is to strengthen enhancement and innovation in teaching and learning with a very strong focus on research and informed practice as a research intensive university. That will be key to our work, with a focus also on inclusivity, sustainability and collaboration. So we work primarily with academic teaching staff, but also with professional services staff who are involved in teaching. And our work with our colleagues is fundamentally underpinned by a partnership model where we work in collaboration with staff to support them in their practice. And we also place great importance on ensuring that students are actively engaged and given a voice in our work. So we regularly recruit student interns and we engage strongly with Trinity College Students Union in all of our work.
Brilliant. Sounds like a fantastic place to work. And Claire, tell us a little bit about yourself and your journey to arrive in Trinity and your work in the centre as well.
Thanks, Michael. And again, thank you for the invitation. It's always nice to have the chance for a conversation like this, and delighted to be here. I'm just over a year in Trinity at this stage, and my role is as academic developer and one of a number of academic developers in the team with Dr. Katrina Nihay and Dr. Anna Schalk. And anything I speak about today, we have worked on together and we'll be name checking them during today. And our learning technologist, Kevin O'Connor. Before that, I was an academic developer in what was DIT, which is now TU Dublin, as everyone will be aware, I think. And a lot of the role has focused around teaching on accredited professional development programmes for the staff who are teaching, inclusive of professional staff who are teaching or supporting students' learning, but also projects. So often curriculum design projects, assessment and feedback work, and digital education enmeshed into all of that. And if we go back further in time, when I would have met you for the first time, Michael, Isaac Maynooth, and I was a year in the education department lecturing in ICT and education before becoming full-time learning technologist and experiencing the rollout of Moodle, the virtual learning environment or learning management system. And again, we may revisit a little bit of that later.
I think we will, Claire. We go back a long way, and that was the TeachNet project. And isn't it ironic, Claire actually evaluated the TeachNet project with Aidan Mulkeen a long time ago when she was in Maynooth. That project is no longer on the go, as they say, but we have reinvented it and we've kept it going in another guise. But I'm going to go back maybe to Pauline and just start with you. And when I visited your website and the mission, and you touched on some of this in your opening comments, to inspire and strengthen a culture of enhancement and innovation in teaching, learning and assessment underpinned by research, innovation, inclusivity, sustainability, and collaboration. What does that look like, and how do you go about achieving that? And maybe you might give me some examples of the kind of work you do to achieve the mission.
Yes, we've a great team in the centre. As Claire has already touched on, we have a team of three academic developers, Claire, Katrina, and Anna, learning technologist, Kevin, a teaching and learning project manager, Nicola, and our education support officer, Jade Concannon. We work really strongly together to focus. Our work is underpinned by four key pillars, if you like. So Claire's already touched on some of those. A really important part of our work would be facilitating professional development with a focus on teaching and learning enhancement for staff. So this includes, for example, our special purpose certificate in academic practice, for credit modules for graduate teaching assistants who are essentially PhD students. We also offer a lot of not-for-credit professional development. So, for example, workshops, seminars, symposia on areas of strategic priority for Trinity or particular challenge for academic staff. We also work very closely with our colleagues across professional services in supporting excellence and innovation in teaching and learning through, for example, supporting the development of policy relating to teaching and learning. We run Trinity's Excellence in Teaching Awards, which are annual awards. We also work very closely with programme teams, where we support programme teams across our 24 schools through curriculum design process. For example, where a programme are redesigning an existing undergraduate or postgraduate programme, or where they are designing a brand new programme, we would support them through that and through a consultative collaborative process. We also, as you've touched on, one of our key goals is to nurture teaching and learning communities. So seeding and nurturing those networks, which would be disciplinary and cross-disciplinary. And at the minute, they would typically focus almost like a special interest group model. So they're focusing at the minute on generative AI, which I know we'll be talking about shortly, and education for sustainable development. And finally, is particularly important for ourselves is that we focus on advancing and promoting research and scholarship in teaching and learning. So in addition to being research active ourselves, we're also very much support staff to engage in educational research. And we're in the process of putting out a call to staff to fund pedagogical projects where staff are encouraged to evaluate and integrate new pedagogical innovation into their own programmes or their own practice. Very new initiative. And that's broadly our key activities, but typically we also align activities with key areas of strategic priority in Trinity. I know we'll touch on some of these today, but those typically evolve over time and they align with Trinity's strategy, with national priorities, with funding opportunities. And again, at the minute, those would be generative AI, education for sustainable development, and the inclusive curriculum is coming up next year for us as a key part of our work too.
I might just go back. I might go to Claire on this one. I mean, when I look at the mission again, and it's a fantastic mission, I see their enhancement. And then I'm listening there, and I think the work that you're about to undertake in the whole area of new pedagogies. I wonder, could you say a bit more about that? And is it new pedagogies, or is it that with these new technologies that maybe some older pedagogical approaches are going to be reframed or re-enthused? You know, because I read quite a bit about this myself, but again, I sometimes struggle to see these new pedagogies, but I do see that there are quite a lot of older pedagogies that are taking on a new shape because of the technology. So Claire,
yeah, it's a really important observation and question, Michael. Yeah, I tend to be a little bit wary of pedagogies as a kind of shopping list of pedagogies we do or don't have or introduce or, you know, new and old. And maybe that's only a personal thing. But I think for me, when you think about enhancement, probably the most important dimension of that for me is the dialogue with the people doing the teaching. And if we can get to the point where they've come through the door and come in to join us for any of our initiatives, it could be a webinar, a workshop, an event. Ideally, we might have a longer engagement over the course of an accredited module. And we actually really get talking with them then about what's happening. Where are their challenges? Where are the things that they want to improve? And that's shifting all the time. So the conversations we have now, particularly since the lockdown era, would be very different to the conversations we had 9 or 10 years ago. And that's part of the dynamic of all of this. And actually, I have to say, a real privilege as an academic developer to have that opportunity to talk with people and tease out what's happening and then think of what kinds of things we can point them to, we can go through it with them, we can see where we might cherry pick this or that. So I think pedagogies is a good catch-all for talking about a range of teaching and learning strategies that we might highlight, point people towards, modify with them, help them to adapt for their purposes.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm looking here on the shelf beside me and I'm looking at Mike Sharple's book, Practical Pedagogy, and I think he had over 100 different strategies in there, you know, and I think the whole idea of dialogue and, you know, discussing with people what they're doing, why they're trying to do it, how they're doing it, I think this is really, it's these professional conversations that I think are so important.
Absolutely. And that's where we hope to enable people to carve out the time for it, because there are just so many other calls on their time. In a research intensive university, that's even more pressurized because the pull to research is stronger than in some contexts. And if we can just get to that point, because there's a massive amount people can carry on doing then, they don't always need to be in the room with us. And in fact, it's a jumping off point for a lot of people. But if we can get to that stage and we can, and then they can come back and talk to us again at intervals in the future, or join in a new project and we have a new initiative, and we build up our network, I suppose, through alumni of various kinds.
I think that makes a lot of sense. And also, I think just to finish on that point, on the new pedagogies work you're going to do, I do quite a lot of work at the European Commission level with the ministries of education in this area of digital education. And again, you know, and we're at this a long time. I think between the three of us here, you know, we have north of 25 years experience between us all. So, you know, these are not new conversations. The technologies keep changing, but people are still looking for practice. I mean, Pauline spoke about practice as well. And I think it'll be really interesting to see what you find out. And I would imagine, you know, that different disciplines have different signature pedagogies. Again, to go back to Shulman and some of his work in this area, you know, the maths people really only want to know where digital works for them, and the social scientists are probably only interested in their field. And I suppose when we hear competencies, Claire, we're talking about knowledge, skills and attitudes, and, you know, just the whole area of critical thinking. It sounds very much related to other topics like generative AI, which is the flavor of the month at the moment. So would you maybe share a bit of what you're doing there and how they overlap?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think we do see this overlap cropping up all the time. And interestingly, within the last 3 weeks, Katrina and I were working with a group in our curriculum design module, and we decided to do a negotiated curriculum piece with them where they could decide what topic we would have for one of our closing workshops. So we had 6 workshops and they chose the topic, and they asked us to look at interdisciplinarity. So when we were preparing that, it was interesting for us because we hadn't had a direct focus on that in an earlier workshop, although we touched on graduate attributes and we touched on interdisciplinary issues. So we worked to develop this workshop to give them, and suddenly we found ourselves into transversal skills, into cross-disciplinary and transdisciplinary work. And we could see this great sort of possibility of really addressing a lot of these themes together. And that would counter some of the issues around assessment in Gen AI. So, for example, if we have alternative assessment formats that are more focused on the competencies, we would get away from some of the urgent concerns around generative AI and our existing assessment methods. But we would also get the ESD side of things coming in. So you're quite right. If we have problem solving, critical thinking, working together collaboratively, all of those sorts of competencies that we see cropping up, maybe with slightly different naming going on and slightly different labels, but we could actually address a number of key concerns together. And that's been very helpful to us. And I hope it was helpful to our group as well, because what we can see there is a way into this from the practical side, that it isn't having to do 3 more new things to your curriculum because of Gen AI or because of sustainability or because of the skills that employers are talking about or any of those conversations. Actually, if we look at this in the round and we think about the essences of these core competencies, then we would actually hit the targets across a number of key concerns and the themes that we're working on in education at the minute.
Would it be fair to say, because I was reading an article this morning on LinkedIn, that if you adopt that kind of an approach where you're looking at the graduate attributes, you're looking at cross-disciplinary, you're looking at key competencies, you have a better chance maybe at getting at the purpose or the true purpose of the university and what a university education should be all about and how you can equip the students across, I think Pauline mentioned 24 schools, you know, so that they actually are able to, you know, irrespective of the discipline, that they are able to develop those key competencies and come out as graduates who are able to work effectively in their fields, but also function as citizens.
Absolutely. And that would be the hope. And when we work with groups on reflection and encouraging them to reflect on practice and to think about whether the purposes that people had in mind for particular teaching, learning and assessment strategies when they were designed, whether those purposes are still the same or have changed, what's really at the heart of the matter, so that our energies aren't focused on preserving something because it's there and because we may have always done it that way, or we may have done it that way for a long time, but instead thinking, is this actually achieving, you know, is this enabling the learner, more to the point, to achieve the learning outcomes that we have designed for them? There are issues with that, usually practical issues. You know, it's been well documented internationally as well as here that lectures and exams tend to hang around in systems because they're cost effective. You can Yes. put a lot of people through a process at the same time. However, I think some of the focus on preserving exam integrity at the moment, in light of various changes with digital devices and with AI, is focused on preserving the exam rather than maybe what the purpose of that exam might be, what we actually want to assess, and can we stand over what the student is coming out with at the end of that process. So it's not easy. By no means is it an easy thing to do, but I think it's just trying to focus on the right problem is part of it.
Yeah, but I think by taking it up to that higher level as well as giving yourselves a little bit of a, you know, you're getting out of the nettles, as they say, and you're actually getting to try and look at this in a more holistic way. And Claire, I know that the centre is very much involved in collaborative work, and you're working a lot with the Teaching and Learning Forum and with your other colleagues across the sector. And I'm going to now talk about generative AI and the enhancement of teaching and learning. And again, just from what you're seeing across the university and from other engagement that you have with the other centres across the universities, are you seeing any particular areas where it is enhancing and it is maybe providing more opportunities for the students to engage more? And again, going back to the earlier piece on things like critical thinking and critical learning, I suppose, in terms of, you know, content and making judgments about it and these kind of things.
Yes, I think the short answer would be yes, in terms of the collaboration, Michael, and that's absolutely key, just as it is with ESD and with any of these larger scale initiatives or themes that are hitting us in higher education. No one institution can fix this or solve this or work out what to do on its own. So being able to collaborate with others is absolutely essential, and it helps us to understand what's being experienced and, you know, how people are mitigating problems that might be happening or taking the opportunities that might arise. And again, the National Forum, HEA National Forum for the Enhancement of Teaching Learning, has been really valuable in that space, bringing people together and energising networks around the country. So that's been very helpful. I think there is also a sense of a little bit of overwhelm, particularly with AI. ESD was something that is a strategic theme that's had funding aligned to it for the past few years. This is something else, like, you know, people have compared it to the tidal wave or whatever. And it's also quite conflicting technology. When we get out to the disciplines, it's really difficult to gauge what their response is going to be. And for many colleagues in the humanities, for example, would see it as an existential threat. They're already facing existential threats. So when we look internationally and we look at what's going on in the UK higher education sector at the moment, for example, really whole disciplines, whole institutions endangered through resourcing issues. So I think there's a natural trepidation there. But there are examples of where it's really helping people if they engage with it in their teaching. And I'm borrowing that term from Dr. Martin Compton from King's College London, who we were fortunate to have at our symposium event a couple of weeks back, who used this sort of metaphor of the Janus face, you know, and saying there's so much you hear about this and it's quite conflicting when you're just reading about it. It's all good or it's all bad, but we can't ignore it. We've got to engage with it and try and navigate through it. And I certainly would hear a lot of clear examples of where particularly students who might have a learning difficulty or a learning disability Yes. are finding it incredibly valuable. And that tutoring element, the tutor, inverted commas, doesn't get tired. They don't get judgmental. And, you know, that sort of presence in supporting students' learning Yep. seems to have value for a lot of students. And then in terms of what the lecturers are doing, that's very much dependent on the discipline. I mean, I saw a lovely example a number of months ago. It was over in the States, but it would be interesting to share this and see what people think of it here, where a history lecturer was getting students to design personas who would have been living in Pompeii at the time that Vesuvius erupted. And, you know, so they can have a dialogue. Now, again, you can have a long discussion about the authenticity of that and getting it right. But those kinds of scenarios, rather than the worry about it going to write an essay for somebody, but what actually is the potential to design and context a scenario, get the students to engage with that for active learning. You know, we could go on, but there's lots of scope for that.
Yeah, you've raised a lot there. I mean, I think the whole discussion around the humanities, you know, in this world of AI and generative AI particularly, is one that needs to be had. And I hadn't come across Martin Compton's phrase, but I totally agree with him. And I think Pat and I have recently been working in a number of further education and training institutions, and we've had some very critical discussions and very lively and very good discussions with faculty. And I think you really need to start using these things. And anything that I'm reading is, you know, you need to start playing around with it, need to see what it can do for you. And it certainly isn't a lot of times we use these simplistic binary, you know, yes or no, black and white. And there's an awful lot of shade of gray here on this particular technology. And again, I think we have to say that we are, you know, ChatGPT is only going to be 3 years in the mainstream in November. We're not even 3 years. And I'm reminded, Claire, of something you wrote a long time ago, which I quote liberally around the place when you were talking about digital technology in general. And you can say it better than I, but the way I remember it is that you can either look at it as a literature of hope or a literature of disappointment. I think at the moment, there's a lot of literature of hope and a literature of fear. But when we always look back on these things, we sometimes struggle to find examples of how it's transformed or how it's really engaged and all of that. So I just wonder, are you having a little bit of deja vu in your own work?
I think we probably all are if we've been engaged with digital education for a while. And I'm sure you and Pauline and other colleagues would share that. I do think there is deja vu. I mean, from the earliest years that I've worked in this area, going back to when we were trying to learn a bit of HTML to write a web page,
yes,
in the end of the 90s, people have been confidently predicting this is the end of universities, the end of the campus, you know. So that's almost 30 years. And in fact, what we've seen is the expansion of campuses, even the physical campus, never mind the student numbers. You know, you can't go onto a campus without seeing a crane there and a building going on. So
yes,
I think we have to be very hesitant about saying, you know, it's all going to be amazing in the future or it's all going to be terrible. And usually we land somewhere in the middle. I think it is a little bit more difficult with this because it is such a big change and it's also a societal change and there's a political dimension to it. And I don't think we can ignore that. People are concerned about the closeness, for example, of Silicon Valley to administrations, particularly in the US. Again, though, I think the key to that is engaging with it. I don't think turning one's back on it is going to address that challenge and that problem. But to come back to our sort of work day to day in education, I think when I was thinking about disappointment, it was around some of the research on uptake and use of virtual learning environments, learning yeah. management systems like Moodle, where people said, well, they haven't had the effect that we thought.
Yeah.
But actually, it hadn't been defined where we wanted to go to. And there hadn't really been a process of saying, well, are we saying we want to become a distance and online institution? Because then you see maximum use of that system. But in fact, we're campus-based institutions for the most part. So therefore, what's the change that we're trying to get to? And we've had an interesting conversation about this before, about what's the nature of the change. You know, if we're saying it's going to bring change and we want particular change, we need to do some work on identifying what that change is.
I think that's a really interesting idea, this idea of change. And again, this comes back again to the idea of the mission and the enhancing and the innovating. And, you know, we're constantly developing new tools. New tools are emerging. And somebody recently in our group from Nantes University mentioned, they referred to generative AI as an unwelcome guest, but it's not unwelcome in all areas, but that there's, you know, not everybody is, you know, is welcoming the arrival of these technologies, and some are a little fearful and others are angry. And I think we need to respect that and we need to be able to allow them and give them the space to critically consider when, how, where, and what they might do with these technologies, what their students might do with them. There's also this other piece that for many, they will be expected to use them in the world of work or even as citizens. I mean, DigCom 3 at the European level is being redesigned at the moment. You may have seen in the last 2 weeks, the OECD and the European Commission have launched a draft set of AI literacy competencies for schools, which will be tested as part of PISA in the not too distant future. So I think for all these reasons, we can't have stakeholders off doing different things. And, you know, we need people to be talking to each other if we can. It's sometimes not easy, but to have a holistic approach. And if you're finding that challenging within a university, imagine what it's like in the outside world. So I think we'll be coming back to this area to chat to you to see how things are progressing, because I think it's fascinating. And I just want to congratulate you both on the work you're doing. Also, I think a clear message coming out of our chat this afternoon is that this is an evolving story. I mean, there is no, you haven't cracked the atom and, you know, you keep moving up the hill or down the hill. You know, that's the way these things tend to be. Okay, thanks a million. And we'll look forward to reconnecting in the future, and really appreciated the chat with you both this afternoon. So thank you again.
Thank you so much, Michael.
Thanks, Michael.